Good evening. Welcome to the Finance and Governance Committee meeting for Monday, April 25th. Joined by fellow council members, Councilmember Crawler and Councilmember De La Sunez Johnson. Let's go ahead and get started with our business agenda, item 1A.
Sorry, is that
Ridge for sidewalks?
Yeah, sidewalks. Over. Oh.
That's Brittany. I'm sorry. There you go.
Good evening, council members. Thank you for having me here tonight. So I'm bringing forward a request to approve the submission of a grant to the Puget Sound Regional Council's Surface Transportation Program funding opportunity. So the reason I'm bringing this forward to the Finance and Governance Committee meeting is because we had recently completed a screening form for this opportunity, and we didn't receive official approval to apply for this funding until last Thursday, April 21st, which was after the most recent Transportation and Infrastructure Services Committee meeting. However, this funding opportunity is due this Friday, April 29th. So this funding opportunity, we're asking for design funding for the South 144th Bridge sidewalk improvements. So this project will expand the sidewalks from 3 feet to 6 feet and also include a barrier between vehicular traffic and the pedestrian walkways. The design estimate is said to be $550,000, and so PSRC, or the Puget Sound Regional Council, they will fund up to 86.5% through this grant. And so there is a match requirement of 13.5%, which would be $74,250. We do have a portion of that allocated in the project budget CIP page. However, we would be coming back this fall in the biennium budget to request the remaining $31,250 for that match. However, all of the match would come from traffic impact fees. And so we are requesting that the committee approve the application for this grant in the amount of $475,750.
This will be a funny one. I'm totally in support of this. But Kathy was talking about this at the last meeting. Had she had a look ahead at this, or was she just
follow it?
Okay, so that's what she's talking about, but not because she knew this was coming. I was just curious. No, I'm in support of this.
I'm in support as well. I don't have any questions. I drive on that bridge every day and
perilous.
I'm excited about this opportunity. So,
yeah, I'm supportive as well. And as was mentioned, it's in the 2023 CIP budget. And then, as far as documentation, it'll be included in the budget process. So, all right. And that is, grant match. All right.
So I guess I do have a question. So the actual physical change to the bridge will be a wider?
Yes.
Any fencing going up so people can't topple over into I-5 or throw things?
No, fencing was not part of the design. All we have is a little bit of a cantilever to expand the sidewalks, but we could definitely look at that. The design, it's only design cost what's in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
All comments are welcome, so we'll take that into account and include it in the design, incorporate direct customers.
And then will the sidewalks be lowered? They're like really high off the ground, which is weird.
It's at the same level, but there will be a barrier, like a wall or
between them and traffic. Yeah. Okay. And then, so what's that look like for the cars? Are these going to be tight squeeze?
I haven't thought the design yet.
I just to let you know, I had a harrowing experience coming across the bridge where I don't know if it's a new game or not. Someone who was quite young with all their friends in the car in the opposite lane came barreling down the hill from the high school. Mm-hmm. This was just at dusk. I put on all my high beams and stuff to go like I'm in this lane.
Yeah.
I was in the lane I was supposed to be in. I'm hoping that's not some new high school game that's going to become a new trend. But they made it all the way through the intersection before they saw me. So there's something new going on, and I hope that's why I'm asking up the narrow.
Yeah, we'll whatever the design will incorporate all the safety features that are up to standard. So.
Great.
I think a big piece is to widen it so that the kids don't feel like they have to be up against that fence.
Yeah, or fall.
And they're trying to navigate that drop off on the other side, so it's got a tight squeeze. So be curious to see the design when it comes back. Thank you. All right, can we move on to item 1B, which is an update on the Public Works Lease and Facilities Tenant Improvement Project. And sorry, since you're interested in going by others, but I think you're going to kick this off for us.
Yes, company members. The actual title of the memo is Public Works Phase 2 Introduction. So I just want to make sure that we're all understanding. So the phase one, the tenant improvement, was approved by the council, so that's moved on. So this is introduction to what is phase two. So I have prepared a little presentation here. David, you're right on time. So on the presentation here on this page shows the nearly 11-acre site that we obtained. And so this is on the west side, this L-shaped building. This is the one that we have currently worked on tenant improvement.
Excuse me, Hari, question for the chair. Would you like me to put the presentation on the screen? Okay, I can do that while you're talking.
Okay. So what you're seeing on the lower portion of the westerly side is the Chinook Wind projects, that's King County project. And this entire eastern parcel is MLP/UPS portion of the parcel that we will obtain ownership of it in on October 31st or November 1st of 2023. So the history of current public works facilities, in 1972, Tukwila purchased Minkler properties, and then in 88, the needs have expanded beyond what's available at Minkler, so we purchased George Long. And then in later years, we started storing material on long acres that do not quite meet the NPDA requirements. The existing facilities, as you can see, as we have reached the capacity and the limits and stretched beyond its usability. And so the combined public work facilities has been a council adopted and accepted facility study. The history of it starts in July of 2013, and there was a steering committee that looked at the existing buildings, and then there was a commission that started to look for land around the city for the public work sites, for the combined public works facilities. The city purchased 10.86 acres in 2018. Like I mentioned, we have the phase one of it already obtained, and we have gone through the tenant improvements, and I have conducted some tours last week to some of the interested council members. Thanks to all of you, it's actually turned out really well. It's one of the projects where I could clearly state that we didn't spend anything on more than what's needed for the safety. Every item that's there is exactly what the staff need for efficiency. I encourage all of you to take a look at it. And we're here to provide tours for you. And so end of 2019, that's when council accepted the phase one of the project. And end of 2020, there was a budget for 21-22. And then April of 2021 is when the construction of the new fleet facility, Lincoln Construction, started the contract. We were hoping to move in May of 2022, but I put June there just in case. I don't want to overpromise, underdeliver. So concrete is still an item that's expensive and we're waiting. In November of 2023, city will take possession of the Amalfi property. And the other important thing is in 2028, shoreline regulations will update. So that is a key date that we want to get the phase two design underway, permits granted, construction started, to get vested into or get what is the term? So I would like you to look at, so these are safe, functional, forward-looking facilities. I would like you to look at the slide that shows new versus future programmatic needs. The fleet and fleet maintenance has 10,000 square feet at George Long. Now, I'm happy to say we have reached that 20,195 and a little bit more with the facility that we're going to be moving in. Thank you for to the committee and the council. And so similarly, where the Minkler shops are right now is 22,000 square feet, and the projected needs, programmatic needs, are about double that, roughly 41,000. And another significant item that you will see where we're lacking is covered fleet parking. And all of our fleet that is stored under cover would last longer and would be easier to maintain. We need 29,000 square feet. We roughly have 4,000 square feet under the current circumstances. We also have looked at some funding partnering opportunities, Decant and Bryant facilities. We don't have those right now, but we, if we get those, we have King County and other partners that are wanting to share those facilities with us. So, again, phase one drawing is the next one that shows how the entire fleet and facility staff will fit into this area. It's very space efficient, and it has the most safe facilities that we have given them, starting from recycling of grease material that they use, all of the welding shops with the proper ventilation. And our union that members that are working in the fleet department are going to be, are satisfied with every one of the facilities improvements that we did there. So possible future public workshops, that's the phase two introduction I want to give you. If we leave where this existing fleet and facilities renovated building where it is and put the storage facility for the covered storage and parking across the Chinook Wind, the phase two is where we're asking you to look at the future opportunities here to move Minkler. That would take care of the entire staff that we're going to run this business.
Yeah,
thank you. So this shows everything as is with the fleet and facilities building. And the plan on the right side for phase two, there were some questions that were asked at the last committee, and I'll answer that as we go down. So what is at stake here, the planning? We will own Amalfi UPS site number first 2023. Phase one, which we have soon to be completed. So what is it that we can do between when phase one is done to phase two to prepare for the number 2023 and beyond for our staff? I have provided some options in the memo how to possibly move forward. And on the financing scenarios, So the funding paths are basically, we're looking at if we can, the adopted council adopted D20 funding model says utility will pay for half of it. So we do have funds in the utilities, that's water, sewer, and surface water. And what we're asking, we have applied for some grants. And in case of grants don't come through, there's another way to fill that gap is through, there's going to be excess funds coming through George Long land sale. That's another opportunity council can look at. But what we're looking at is if we can fund the design, $3.4 million is what's estimated, that can move the project in the direction where we will be going towards accepting the site November 2023 with the plan in our hand. So what is some of the things that we have done preparing in that direction, answering some of the questions council members have asked? And the Department of Ecology gave us a waiver, and the waiver is based on public benefit. So the public benefit is a significant improvement of the existing site into non-permeable surface, and so there will be more grass area in the new design compared to where it is right now. And project replaces 2/3 of acre paved parking with native plants and trees. There will be full integration of walking/biking trail from TIB all the way to Duwamish Garden, providing that park kind of benefit to for residents to access the river and the shoreline. And so this combined public workshops is what the council has, if this is how we want to approach this, and if we leave the existing phase one in its place, and you can see the ordinary high water mark where it's moved on this drawing. This is the new drawing that we prepared. We are well away from the ordinary high water mark, so we will be well away from there's a category one buffer and two, we will be definitely away from the one. And so the admin building, the proposed admin building will be slightly into the category two, but definitely will be away from the immediate buffer. So I just want to bring that to your attention. And so some of the questions that were asked were, trying to answer, there's a DECAN facility. King County has already called us. We have a meeting next week to go over with them to attend. How much would they contribute, or what are their needs? How would that? The Tukwila School District has approached us to use some of the base that we have for bus repair. City of SeaTac has asked us a couple of times if they can partner with additional excess fleet maintenance team with us. And the other regional jurisdictions have reached out to our maintenance staff for brine storage tanks. So that's another regional benefit. And internally also, like for Tukwila Police Department, we're looking at vehicle evidence storage providing on this site. Some of the questions that were asked, can we put the admin building elsewhere, was one of the questions that. The answer is yes, it could go elsewhere on the site. We need to study it further. And I apologize, the second question the answer didn't print on this. I think it went beyond the page. Can we repurpose the UPS building into an admin building, the existing building? The answer is yes, perhaps we need to study that also as part of this design. So we want to partner with you guys, with you, the council, and the committee. So that's why I went to the Transportation Committee. We're coming here. We're looking for ideas. We're looking for funding ideas. We're looking for anything to move this project forward. And design anything to design ideas, because for staff and for public works, this is an important project. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions. David, you have to...
Thank you.
What was the total cost of the project? The 1.7 is the total cost of the project, of the new building.
Right. So it's against the engineering principles and judgments to kind of give you a cost without actually designing something. However, general rule of thumb is if your design is $3.4 million, usually it's 10% of your construction cost. So we think that the building that this design will come up with is around $35 to $40 million. I would say $40 million is where we're looking.
Can you explain the 3.4 is to get us to a point where we could grandfather in the plan, but that doesn't necessarily mean move forward with the construction. It's like we want to stake our claim into this parcel and say this is our design. And so if the shoreline, you know, regulations change, they can't say that we can't do the project that we want to do. Is that what's being asked of us right now? Is that what's happening for this?
So that is a possibility. One way of doing this is if we design this and then apply for permits, and once a permit is issued or has gone to a certain level, I can get clarity from DCD and the director of DCD. But my understanding is when you're at that level, you will get vested. You'll get grandfathered into it. So that will give you a certain amount of time to finish the project. It's not like once you're vested, you're good forever, but there is a certain time period. And did I answer your question?
Yeah. Those are my questions just for now.
Right. So this came through transportation structure services. And the question about the admin building by repurposing the UPS building came from Council Member Sharp, I believe.
I think.
Well, maybe Avi.
I think. I can't remember. I have to go back.
Right. And both of them had never been through any of the background that we've been through. So my first request was to get the full study that we had before, where we saw multiple arrangements of where the buildings could go. That was sent to you all, the whole council, right, on Friday around 2.
Yeah.
Ish. Could have been 2:30. And it has 5 drawings about where the admin building can go.
Mm-hmm.
And my request, since I have 2 folks who hadn't even been there historically, was to have that sent to them. And I personally would like to have some printouts made for them. It'd be nice if it was this large,
I can do
where
that.
They could see what some of the possibilities are. The second question I had was, in the drawing that we had, which is in our packet, talking about Zone 1 and Zone 2, which I show humbly to both council members here, this encroaches into Zone 2 and partially into, I think, Zone 1. Right?
On the left, so, yeah.
And I joined the council right after the Shoreline Management Act was updated. But I know we were serious about it, and I'm very serious about it because I know what's happening to our salmon for being on the Puget Sound Partnership through AWC. And I have great concerns. I'm thrilled about what the build is to have this inlet where salmon can thrive. I'm looking at the optics of saying, wow, to the Desdemonies and other people, Sigalis and others, telling them what they have to do for shorelines. And some of them have taken pretty, you know, rough hits on their ability to develop properties or grow them. And here we are saying, gee, if we move fast enough, we kind of have a handshake with King County. I think that's what you said, where we'll build a bunch of trails and things. And I think the trails and things are going to go, DOEs, excuse me. But King County put in most of the shoreline piece and identified this as a salmon refuge, so one built upon the other. And so I'm looking at this going, so DOE doesn't benefit, King County does. I do want to separate the idea. The decant is already going to be part of the buildings in Heiser, right? It's not going in the admin building.
No, it will be a separate building on the site. It's not built yet.
Okay, and the Bryan as well, right?
Yeah, they'll be separate buildings.
Okay. So I'm interested in what outside parties are saying and how they're influencing if they benefit. Just keeping a close eye on that as well, right? So But the most important part to me is here we are struggling to help the salmon and salmon habitats everywhere. And only by a technicality are we saying, let's put a place where the admin can go. We're talking the administrators with offices, et cetera, and shop. But when I look at these other options that came through on Friday, there's at least four other positions that you guys considered, including on the property that we have right now, developed with Pfizer building. We purposely said that the Pfizer building, we're making it phase one, and we're going to keep it as long as we can. And we're about to put in a roof that's going to last 20 years.
Right.
So original plans, when we talked about it, was to demolish it and rebuild, and that's where a lot of these plans fall into place as well. I feel like I get nervous. I'm still stinging from beating legislation from Olympia and building our courthouse, our safety center. I'm still stinging how that worked out for the public, right? And here we are with a much bigger obligation to the public on a river that's been damaged by Boeing, by the city of Seattle, by the harbor, anybody you can name, I'm sure Tequila, Farming, and we're trying to hang on to a resource that may not make it. And we're saying, well, it doesn't matter. Why don't we just build our building? Nobody will worry. We'll make a bunch of trails and it'll look really nice. And I'm looking at these other options that say, you know, we can put it to the east of here. And we can put it a little bit to the north in another drawing that I see. And there's one, I think, that actually has it over by the Heiser building, which, you know. And then I'm listening closely to this covered parking piece. How long do we keep each car before we recycle it?
So it's more than the cars. We're also looking at the street cleaner, back trucks, a lot of those things.
Okay.
So it depends on...
So what are we talking, 20 unique
years.
Devices?
Yeah.
And then the rest of it's the fleet that we replace. How many years, basically?
Current plan, we have maybe 10 years or 100,000 miles, whichever.
Right. So police car gets 100,000 miles quicker than 10 years. I see them go by a lot quicker than that. So maybe some of these are lasting 10 years, perhaps what administration uses the miles. I'm not sure. Don't measure that. I just listed a concern overall. Are we actually caring about nature and the plans that we plan on the Shoreline Act? Are we accepting our own rule because we're special somehow and nobody else is? Why does that make sense that we're angling for that instead of look for a... To me, this is just like planning your living room. You get to cut out pieces of the couch, the TV, and everything else, and you rearrange it until it fits. And so I look at two or three options here that are different, and I have a question mark. Why are we trying to reserve against our salmon this way?
So,
because I think, so there's a question about the design. There's still a question before us, whether we're comfortable going forward. But let's speak to some of the things that were articulated. There was a lot there. But to what's being shared with us and how we build it.
So let's unpack the first thing. Was our ability to get a waiver from Department of Ecology, and we have conference from Shields Olbus Johnson. The reason that Department of Ecology gave us that is that we are going to improve this for salmon. So it's going to improve the water quality than it is right now. And so I'll let Ben Frantz-Knight, because he helped us write that, we went with the watershed company. I believe we sent that out to all the council members as well, that very long list of all the things that we are going to do to improve this impervious pavement. It is paved all across this area, and our design actually improves this for salmon going forward. And
would any of the other designs improve it?
It could be, and that's why this design...
We're clear, that's not just this building.
Right.
Okay.
But this design, and so let's talk about why we got the waiver, is that this is, per RCW, is that we ask waivers. They're not always granted. There is a waiver currently on the Amalfi site that was granted to that property owner because of our Duwamish Gardens effort. They have a waiver because they went through the normal process. And you can see all the green space, we are going to improve this property. But I'll leave it to Mr. Frantz-Knight from SOJ, who has been helping us out on this process.
Thanks, David. And council members, great questions tonight. You are stewards of a public asset. You are also stewards of the natural environment. And for those of you that may know, SOJ as a firm is deeply committed to those values. We recently served a significant role in Climate Pledge Arena, one of the greenest arenas in the country. And I'm also working with the Seattle Aquarium on their Ocean Pavilion project. So really firmly believe in the value public projects bring and can have a positive impact on the environment. You know, I think the issue before you tonight is, you know, what you do next with this property, right? In its current condition, it has a lot of non-permeable surface. So it's not a great neighbor to these projects. And I think what you have is an opportunity to realize your values, to explore all the options in this next level of design exercise, you know, within a regulatory framework and yes, on a timeline that hopefully allows you to balance those two, right? Stewards of that public asset and stewards of the environment. And, you know, I think this design exercise will afford you just that opportunity.
Quick question. Are we going to tear up all the parking lots anyway because they are non-permeable? I mean, we talk about doing that at every property we've ever been at.
I don't think the current design has it, at least on the northern part, like for the fleet facility building. We kept everything on the north side because it met the program design.
Right.
But we are doing landscaping and improving where we can along the, you could see a lot of the landscaping design that we've done.
And will those landscape trails and grasses all occur whether we put the admin building there or not?
I think as Mr. Frank Knight talked about, that is the design question, right. Is how we design it.
But let me just clarify, in county easement is only on their portion of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So us partnering with them makes that connection all the way to Duwamish Gardens. So it's not that we're taking advantage of somebody else's easement. We are contributing to the easement and we're contributing to the project. Our project managers are working on that project. So I just want to clarify that. After that, Ben, if you want to add.
That is
all
correct.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, we were just kind of asked to have a discussion. I mean, I think there were some, both council members raised some great points in consideration of the design that will come forward. What you hear is a message around our values. In addition, knowing the peacetime partnership, stormwater is the biggest issue in the urban space. So, as you can see, one of the lines involve a road. And, you know, those things that weren't fully factored into the Puget Sound Partnership, but did when South Central area said, hey, we're already built it out, we need to consider these things. So, I think around the design and stormwater, which is the biggest threat to fish and the sound. So I think what you heard was our commitment to values. And actually also, you know, it's been many years now since we've had that conversation around D2. So I appreciate Councilmember Perla articulating, like, let's see the full picture so everyone knows what we're about to do. It's a big project, and we got to make sure that what's there is right. But also there's this conversation around the design and potential partnerships. So with that in mind, and I think it seems fine going forward where we're going to go, but just acknowledge that stormwater is a big thing, so that actually might impact the brine tanks, because that is a liability for contamination. But now's the time to have early conversations around partnerships and what money's going to come. So I think we've got a sense of where we are now. And you haven't done the design, but I think the thing is kind of commit to being open to other approaches,
mm-hmm.
and not just the one that we come into this meeting with. Consider all of those so we can factor in those values.
And so I do want to point out the decant is over by the Heiser building in this drawing, not on the second property.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So my question was that you indicated it would be over by.
Yeah, it's a separate building. But I agree, it's here, and the Bryant is somewhere here.
I very much would like to see, even though we sent it to them in email, I'd love to see printouts this size. Of what I get excited for, 14 through 16?
I can tell you.
Or maybe it's 14 through 18, whichever. Let's get those to all the council members so they can see what you've been considering.
I think those are going to be required steps as we continue to go forward, because 39 million is a lot of money. So giving them the tools to make that big of a decision, which wasn't a slam dunk. So I think we should operate with that in mind. And it wasn't a slam dunk, and we have to figure out how to find tens of millions of dollars to finish this project.
Now, another point is that we had this conversation, I think, as late as those options in October, but I know Councilmember Quinn and myself, at least, if not more, were saying, do a better job on Heiser. We're not going to demolish it. We'll put in more money. We're still putting in more money. I'm not saying we'll never develop phase two or phase three, but I'm a little surprised. We think that we're rolling ahead with phase two, three conversations, because we went from having no money in our pockets. That's when we were saying, I don't know about that. Let's just concentrate on a quality Heiser building remodel. And now we've gone through 2 years of COVID, and we're staring at an inflation rate that's going to blow our minds in the next couple, 3 years. Is this the right timing to be trying to plan this kind of thing?
Well.
Talk about it. Yes.
I would spend
a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean.
I get nervous.
Yeah. There's probably a loop back. I mean, what are some options to consider? But again, just keep a finer point on this. Like, it took a long time to get to D20.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our actions and our presentation and our packages that we put forward, so keep that in mind. It is not a slam dunk. And if it's done poorly, then this council, who has a responsibility of the purse, it may fail.
Mm-hmm.
So fail to go forward. So I would proceed with that in mind. That it isn't a slam dunk, and that it was a struggle to get here, and we still need to justify the amount of money that it would take. Now, we all understand conceptually, but then that's how you do it. It's the most important. So I just wanted to emphasize that, because at the end of the day, our job is to approve budgets and projects. If it's not clear that you're hearing where the council is coming from, then it will fail. It will get voted down. And sometimes it's good to just be that explicit. And I think that's what it's going to take to make sure that we have a quality level of projects, and to know that the concerns are heard and actually built into the project.
And one other statement I have, which is really a question. If we had to pick all these buildings to build, is it the most logical to do the admin shop one first? Or can we move soils over? Can we move Brian over? Can we move, you know, parking that's already uncovered over to uncovered over there? Are there steps to take that would utilize that property? Is it possible, again, other council members talked about, so I'm going to honor Councilmember Fabry. Could we temporarily use the UPS buildings for admin? The only rush here is some kind of a short year reprieve to build. And what I really don't want is a gun to our head in 2 years that says we got to hurry up and build this admin building. Well, maybe it's not the first thing we should be building.
Well, I think that's the part we can design. If they bring forth a design that doesn't meet the concerns and can't explain it, because there's a certain point where we can't tell them where to put stuff, or they'll say the design is on you.
Yeah.
So let's go forward with design, but all the things that were articulated that need to be factored in, and also give the other two council members an opportunity to get up to speak. And we're always pretty good, like, get a design that's factored in the considerations, we're okay. But don't make an assumption that it's a slam dunk. I mean, it's kind of, we said it 15 different ways in the last 5 minutes. So I think that message will stick.
Yeah, we totally appreciate all the feedback, but this will make us better the next time, isn't it?
He has a question, and I have a question. What is the purpose for showing these two funding path scenarios? Are we picking, or are we just saying there are two ways that this could go?
Those are just two examples, Councilmember, is that we applied for a grant. We don't know. It's, you know, again, it's unlikely we'll get it. There are lots of other community needs out there. But if we get it, that's one path. And if we don't get it, that, you know, other land sale is another path. And we're here to hear, you know, get ideas from you, share our ideas with you.
Yeah. Start
with D12. My question is for the two involved committee chairs, when you are ready to move this forward to the committee of the whole for full council discussion. Is it a good time to talk about that, everybody?
Yeah, I mean, what's not new here is looking at phase two.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about a design, we need the outcome. So I think it's just a message around where you think is do enough council members, are they aware of it? There's no surprise here.
Okay.
And plus it was brought up in the previous meeting. And so I think we expected some more information on phase two. And design will be a part of that. But consideration and What hurts a little bit is this. It hurts in house, right? That when you're doing the due diligence on DO. And I think for us to know, okay, Public Works is being prudent with the approach and considering these things, so there ain't no surprises later on, or we'll get our other permitting challenges. So I think we're
and definitely want the pages as big as these are, given all the council members for that conversation.
I think it's, again, let's move on to the next one, but I think a part of this is that we struggle through D20. And if there are new council members, we want them to expose to the same amount of information that we have in consideration of the enormity of this project and its impact on the residents in the future, and not just a tour with some talking points,
mm-hmm.
the full picture. So as they consider, as we get closer.
And we did go approach Seattle City Light about that one triangular piece of land. I don't recall if they just didn't respond or they said hell no, but it might be, you know, Jack's gone. Maybe it's time to go have another conversation. Is there a way we can work something out together?
Right. The answer they gave us, Councilmember, was at that time their chief finance officer, I believe Deborah, decided not to settle any of the properties at that time. So that's all we know at that time. We can always go back and approach again.
2 years later, after COVID, they're starving for money. Might be amenable. And I don't know that Jacko speaks directly to CFO, or he goes through somebody else lower and it came down through CFO.
We have a rep that we talk to every month. I have a monthly coordination meeting. She's our franchise coordinator or manager, somebody at a level like that. And, so I can definitely approach her and go from there.
And so this is phase two. Saying to talk about phase three till end with, and if we decide there's a whole bunch of decisions to be made. But let's move on to the next slide.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you. Great deliberation.
All right. So this last item is in response to a request from the chair and council member Kohler made a few weeks ago, requesting some fact-based information about the current minimum wage initiative effort. I put this memo together to address the key things I heard come out of that request. And I actually attached the full
initiative language as attachment one, and that's the attachment in your packet. So long story short-ish, the Transit Riders Union is currently gathering signatures for this petition. It proposes to establish fair labor standards and protect the rights of workers by ensuring that the vast majority of employees in the city of Tukwila receive a minimum wage comparable to neighboring cities of SeaTac and Seattle. It requires that every large employer pay an hourly wage not less than the wage in the city of SeaTac beginning July 1st, 2023, then adjusted annually based upon 100% of the annual average growth rate of the Seattle-Tacoma-Bellevue CPIW. Unlike SeaTac, the proposal would cover all sectors. So in SeaTac, it's just hospitality and transportation. And then there are some exceptions. Employers with 15 through 500 employees worldwide would get a phase-in period. Businesses with fewer than 15 employees or annual gross revenue under $2 million would be exempt. An interesting thing that I learned while reading the initiative language for the first time is it includes enforcement provisions that impact the city. It would be the responsibility of the city, and I wanted to mention that that's not in the current budget and could have an impact of staff resources. It also mentions that the city attorney could manage violations of the chapter, which I'm not sure if that's a legal role that the city attorney can fill. So to get an initiative petition successfully submitted, they need 15% of the total number of registered voters of the last general election. And in this case, they need 1,661. They've indicated to the city they expect to submit these in mid-June. And then the next page, I cut and paste from MRSC because they have a very clear outline of the steps involved. And I'm not going to read it to you, but, you know, if they submit their petition, the city clerk pretty much turns it around quickly to the county, and the county's role is to validate the signatures to make sure they've met that threshold. If they have not met that threshold, they get an additional 10 days to supply additional signatures. If they do have sufficient signatures, then the city council has two options. You can pass the proposed ordinance as is within 20 days, or you can submit it to a vote of the people at the next appropriate election.
If we did submit it to a vote of the people, can we amend it?
I don't believe you can, but I will follow up on that question.
My understanding strategically is they're going for 3,000 but signatures to make it a solid petition.
Okay. Moving on to the next page, there's a little more detail about the ballot title. The county auditor decides the exact language of the ballot title, and then the people working on the initiative have an opportunity to weigh in. They can file an appeal. There's a few more details involving the city clerk's role, and then finally, step 10, if the majority of the number of votes cast favor is adopted, and it becomes effective upon certification of the election results. And so this is something that the city council wouldn't be able to change after that was done. The only way that you can repeal or amend an ordinance that was adopted by initiative process is through another vote of the people. The next table is about other minimum wage laws that exist. And so I heard a question about the difference between Seattle and SeaTac minimum wage laws. And you can see in the table that there are some minor differences. In SeaTac, again, it's for hospitality and transportation workers. And then they both have annual increases. Seattle's is based on the local CPIW, but SeaTac is based on the Washington State rate of increase, which is the U.S. city average. And then if you look at this memo online, you can see I have a link to the legislation behind each of those things. And then finally, the last section is just a really short summary of what you've heard from me before and the city attorney before about your limitations with respect to weighing in on ballot measures as a city council member. It's pretty limited, but you're pretty familiar with that, I think. And so with that, that's my overview. Let me know if you have further questions.
I just want to comment, this is a really well put together memo. I continue to learn every time I get more facts on this thing, which is, I think, the whole point of doing this is so that we all understand what can happen and what our roles are. And it'll be interesting to explore the attorney and I guess, would it be police or would it be code that would do enforcement actions?
Well, the language is not very specific. So I think if this did pass as is, the city would have some flexibility in that. I did notice there's a section that you can outsource it or work with other agencies to enforce it. Oh, yeah. Section 7 of – so page 5 of the attachment, in section 8, number 7, it says the city may agree by contract or otherwise to participate jointly – or in cooperation with the state, the county, or any city, town, or other place, or engage outside counsel to enforce this chapter.
Brilliant. So just a follow-up there would be, what are the other two decided to do, Seattle and CTAC?
Sure, I can get that.
I don't have any questions. This is a really great memo. Just outlining everything. You said, just clarifying that you've heard that there's plans to submit the petition or the signatures in June.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible it'll come to us, or it's planning to come to us this year.
Yeah.
Later, shortly after that. We can't amend it. Once it comes to us, we could only either submit it for a vote on the ballot, or we can adopt it.
Yeah.
I just wonder, there's some portions in here that would involve, you know, a high level assessment from the city attorney as it stands. What's the plan for us to do this, right? This is what we're doing, is being very transparent, bringing this forward,
mm-hmm.
being very neutral. Can we have the city attorney speak to, in the same way,
mm-hmm.
to the areas where there's a lack of clarity, and then I think maybe the next step is maybe go to the COW with the responses and the few questions that we have to be informative. And again, it's how you articulate that there are questions. So, like, having a substantive, like, okay, this says this. This is how other cities have done it in the past. Just more, I mean, we have a responsibility to have a level of neutrality in it. That way that actually gets in front of whatever gets finalized, so folks can actually, if they wanted to, come to the COW here, read what the city attorney has assessed based on what's before it that speaks specifically to our responsibility. So I think if we can do that in a neutral way, it makes sense, because there's a lot of really good information.
Okay, we can do that.
And then I have a very strange question, which, you know, it sounds like we can't talk to them and negotiate changes, but I never heard anything about that with the council and elected officials independently speaking for the city, but I never heard anything about whether the admin could actually sit down with TRU and say, hey, in these areas of enforcement, there's conversation we might want to have, negotiate a change or and clarify where they want to go. Similarly, I don't think there's any huge impacts on the percentages, whether they're national or not. You can see them, but they're not like $5 an hour apart, so I'm not concerned any more than I was before. Now I have the information. Just in those kinds of areas,
sure,
you know, of visioning this, it might be smart to suggest to the administration, if it's legal, to sit down, and because they came to us once before and we said, we can give you any public list, I guess, of businesses, or we couldn't, I can't remember, and we really can't help you with any of this.
Yes, that's right. The city attorney at the time recommended to city staff to not, it's not the city staff's role to engage with preparing a petition. And the petition language can't be changed mid-course while they're gathering signatures.
Right.
And so are you suggesting that
Well, if the city and the administration and the TPD and the code officers and the attorney all think this is the best fit for Tukwila, I wouldn't talk to them at all. You just let it roll through. But if there's anything that we would like nuanced and they don't see that it's a problem, it seems like the conversation ought to happen.
I don't think it can be changed at this point, though.
Yeah. They have to file. They got to file a petition.
Yeah.
And I think the way that can be done is having the city attorney highlight the things that of this public actual information, which is what we're doing. But I think a meeting specifically for that, I just think it's right. So I think the shot is to, as it's presented here, and that's the benefit of having it presented here, and then why there could be an assessment from the city attorney that is available for all the public to see because we are a reference. I think that's as close as we actually, and I'd be curious to hear from the city attorney.
I think we should go ask the attorney, and I think if they have a preference, they should be pretty clear on what it is. Because this other party has tried to approach us and understand what would be good, bad, or indifferent, and they're making selections on their own and moving forward. It's like, if it doesn't matter to them, it seems like a communication ought to happen somewhere. Rather than make it hard on both parties because we all are on the road to Abilene and nobody's speaking to each other about what may be, you know, heartburn or not.
Yeah, I think formally, now that this is at the committee, then there can be information that then becomes available, and then they can choose to adjust it or not. But then you do actually have it before too. And that is the whole purpose of being transparent, putting this here, is in the responses from the city attorney around these key things that involve us specifically, that information will be consistent to adding to what's here. And it's not a parquet conversation is in the public.
I mean, and also, you know, I'm glad Laurel brought up the possible financial impacts that this could bring about in terms of this whole like regulatory language and information. It would be beneficial to us in our budget deliberations to know whether there would be a fiscal impact, because from what I'm hearing, it's too late to change it. Like they submitted this, it's out there getting signatures.
They haven't submitted this petition. They can change the wording.
They can
all the way up until that moment. Yeah.
I don't think that's true while they're getting signatures, because you can't ask somebody to sign something and then change it.
Well, if you look at the petition, are you saying that the wording that you have in here is the absolute wording and the details that we just talked about, enforcement, et cetera?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That's why we would have the city attorney speak to it so that they're aware before it's finalized, in case after it is officially submitted, anything else needs to be done. But your point is a good one, and that is why we would have the city attorney look at it. And that's why it is good in the public process of this to outline.
Yeah.
So based on what we see here, the impacts versus maybe, you know, not being transparent and then coming out at the last minute like this is terrible. So I think we need to just, again, speak to the documentation that's here, if that's appropriate for the city attorney to respond. And I think we're in kind of a safe spot, because again, once they started the signature, that's come up in other issues. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So it will be referred back to the attorney, and we're all staring at this. Will this be made available for the rest of the council?
Well,
every council member receives every packet, and I heard the chair say the next
COW.
Step would be COW. So yes,
that's what I'm just following up on the answers. Okay.
Are we adjourned?
Yep.
Thank you.